Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. I'm hosting. Alongside me is my co-host with the most ghosts. I think he's got ghosts. I don't know. I needed to rhyme with most, and I panicked. Joe Perez. Hi, Joe. I'm sorry about the ghosts.
That's okay. My body is a ghost factory that takes one lifetime to produce.
Yeah. That's like the one that someone said to me is, like, everybody you meet has a skeleton inside them waiting to come out.
Yeah.
But, howdy, everyone. It's the Blizzard Watch podcast. I don't know why I suddenly did that. But we're going to do the top stories thing, but we don't have that many because, you know, we're in that place where, you know, stuff is waiting to come out. And so we're going to do something a little different with the top stories in that we have a topic we're going to talk about rather than a story as such. And that topic is this. Has patch 9.1 taken too long to come out?
Ooh, that's a loaded topic.
Yes, it is. I didn't choose to softball it on our first attempt at this. Joe, give me a short answer first, and we'll talk back and forth.
I don't think it has, from the simple fact of I would rather content take longer and be of quality than be rushed and be terrible. That's the short answer.
Okay. I do think that saying too long is, of course, subjective. I do think that there has been a lot of strain in the community over the fact that it's taken seven months at this point and counting for this patch to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been better for everybody if it had come out sooner. But that doesn't mean they should have put it out sooner, because Joe's point is pretty valid. You don't want it to be a bug-filled mess. You don't want it to have all sorts of issues. You don't want the balance to be off. Nothing is ever perfect, especially in, you know, MMO patches. Literally nothing is ever perfect. It's always going to be, like, when 9.1 comes out, I guarantee you there will be bug fixes that day. Within a couple hours of it launching, there will be some major problem and there will be a bug fix for it. That's going to happen. But at the same time, this patch has been on the PTR for, like, what? 3 months?
It's been a hot minute, yeah.
Yeah, and they're still not done testing it. This is a big patch. There's a lot being added.
Heck, the Sylvanas fight alone is massive amounts of testing just because of the scope of it.
Yeah, and there's the new raid, which is a substantial raid. There's significant changes to Torghast. There's really big changes to the Maw. Flying is being introduced into Shadowlands. Mounts are being introduced into the Maw. Korthia, an entirely new subzone of the Maw. There is a lot. There's a new mega dungeon. There's new legendaries and, like, new levels of legendaries and a new system for leveling legendaries. One of the things that I saw somebody talking on Twitter, and I apologize, I can't remember who it was, but it was a really good point, because he hadn't been playing WoW. Like, he didn't start when we did. He came back to the game like a month ago. And he made the point, he goes, maybe you guys are used to this, but to me, there's so much endgame progression to do. Like, there's like five systems I'm interacting with. That's a lot. And I stopped and thought about it. I'm like, I was like, yeah, you got to get anima to build up your sanctum. Then you need to make sure you've got enough soul binds so that you get your three soul binds and you can get that done. And then you need to get conduits for your soul binds and make sure that they're all linked up and they're the ones that really work for you. And then you have to spec them for each spec you're doing. Of course, you have to choose the covenant and you have to get your renown up so that you get through the story and get, and it's like, yeah, and that's not even counting like PvP or doing Mythic Plus or anything. Like, yeah, I don't think I even talked about like, each covenant has its own subsystems that I didn't talk about. I mean, there is a fair amount to do. It's for a new player. It can be pretty daunting.
I was gonna say, there is a lot in game. It's not going to resonate with everybody. Not everybody's going to want to do everything, and that's totally fine. That's A-okay. But there is actually quite a bit. And depending on what you digest, or what you choose to digest, that can alter your gameplay. Like, for me, really, like, I get to play two nights a week. I could play more, but I have other things that I need or want to do. So most of my nights have been spent focused on raiding with my wonderful team at TTGF. And now that we're done with raiding between tiers, I get to focus on something else I like doing, which is doing Mythic Pluses with a core group, because I think that's fun and that's the way that I like to consume that content. So for like me as that type of person, I don't feel that length of time probably as much as other players do, because I'm content with the time that I spent or what I'm spending in game with the level of stuff that I'm consuming. That said, I can understand why some folks feel that the distance between the patches is too long, but it's a wildly subjective thing, and the scope of what they are adding in on top of what's already in the game, it's pretty large, and it looks like they're focusing on larger patches and larger drops instead of what we've seen them do in the past, which was little trickles of content every now and then.
It's, of course, one of the problems is that this expansion came out during a moment of extreme crisis.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I always feel, I keep reminding people of this, and I feel sometimes maybe I overemphasize it, but I think it is important to keep in mind here that this expansion came out last year, and last year was when the Blizzard had to shift entirely to a work from home posture.
Mm-hmm.
When they didn't, like, for years they were developing stuff at the campus, and now they suddenly, you weren't there at the campus, you were at home working from home. That's a big shift, and we keep, like, I think we underestimate how much work it is to do that, and how much work had to go into this expansion.
And here's something that I think a lot of people don't consider either. And when you're working from home, and not to like home work explain to anybody, but there are certain mentality in some people that do this, that they overwork because they're at home. There's no separation between work and office anymore, and they burn themselves out and have to take time off. And I know for a fact that I'm one of those people. I can't work from home like that because I will overwork. And I know that that was happening to some people I know that were working on this, where they would, find themselves working way more and longer than they thought they would. And then they needed to take breaks to recover and recuperate. But the stress of all of that, that was a major undertaking, and that sets everything back. And then you have the other aspect of, not working face to face anymore. A game this large with as many teams as you have, I don't know if people really realize how much collaboration goes on, right? There's your systems teams, your class teams, your stories, your in-game cinematics and everything else. All of those people have to work together and interact. And it's a lot harder to get everybody pinned down maybe when they're working from home than it is to maybe walk down the hall or across campus or, do something like that. And yes, technology allows us, and we exist in a digital world where like hanging out with your friends on Discord is perfectly normal, or even before everything was happening like this, Roll20 was a thing, and Google Hangouts was a thing, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a different mindset, a different shift in how you produce content when you can't just sit in a room and bounce ideas off of each other physically in person. It changes the dynamic of that. And it can be more time consuming to do it now digitally because of that. So
also, I mean, I'm going to say this much though. I do want to say this. There's a difference between if it took too much time and it was avoidable. I do think it's taken too long for Patch 9.1 to come out, but I don't think it was avoidable.
Yeah.
I think you always want stuff to come out faster. You always want there to be more content available. But considering like the game itself got pushed back to November of last year, considering like, you know, we had the pandemic and then, you know, the holidays right after it launched, and then having to get it in, ready to be tested, and then having to test it, there's only so fast this process can go.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been faster in previous years. And I think that the timing was not great here, but there's a limit to how much is avoidable. There's always going to be new stuff that needs to be done at a certain way. I see a lot of discussion about this, and I, to a certain degree, I can't really come up with what they could have done. I don't feel like they've been wasting time. I don't feel like they've been messing around. All the content that's coming, it is huge. I don't think people really understand how big this is. Korthia is massive. There's like new systems coming out, like the new invasions that are coming out. I don't think people know that they are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The Tormentors of Torghast thing, that's by itself, that's almost as big as the invasions from Legion. That's just one thing that's coming here. So was it too long? Probably it was too long in terms of what players were willing to sit through. But I don't think it was avoidable. I don't think there's a way it could have come out much faster. But that being said, I don't know how fast it will come out. I don't know when this is going to come out. It feels like they're in the final testing process, but I'm not there. I don't know how far along they are internally. I have no idea when we'll get a release candidate. I would not be surprised if it came out in July. I feel like July is where we're going, but I can't say for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's only a couple weeks away at the time of this recording, so it's not out without reason. I guess your estimate. I think it's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah, but so we've talked about that one. We're going to move on to like something that's news that I don't really think it's so much an opinion piece. I would like to come back to some other topics like that though. So if you guys liked it, let me know and we'll start doing more of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the next one is that they've got a release date for Diablo 2 Resurrected. It's September 23rd of this year. And Diablo 2 Resurrected is a game I had no idea I wanted. Like, straight up, I was not interested or excited about it. I straight up wasn't.
Oh, I and totally then was.
I the hype came out, and I was like reading the hype, and then I got into the beta and tested it. And it's astonishing how engaging it is. But it is very different. It is a mindset change from Diablo 3. If you've been playing a lot of Diablo 3, don't go into Diablo 2 Resurrected thinking it's going to be like Diablo 3. It's not. I mean, obviously, it's a Diablo game. They all have a lot of stuff in common. But it is very much its own thing. And it plays surprisingly faithful to the original. Like, it is the same game. You do not feel like you are playing a different game. It's not a remaster that feels like it reinvented it. It is very much as could be kept was kept. It's almost like I'd say it's 99% the same experience.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a couple of little changes here and there, but for the most part, it's the same game.
I also think it's interesting, like, and I don't know who decided to do this, but I think this is really cool too. If you haven't played Diablo 3 at all, there is a pack that you can go that not only can you buy Diablo 2 Resurrected, which is Diablo 2 plus the expansion for Diablo 2 Lord of Destruction, but also comes with Diablo 3 and everything that's come out for Diablo 3. So the Reaper of Souls, Rise of the Necromancer, and a bunch, and like a pet and wings, which is pretty cool. And like, it's $20 more, which, you know, price of games aside or that discussion, I think it's pretty neat. And I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for this. And I cannot wait to get my grubby little hands on it.
Yeah, and it's going to be for, you know, consoles as well as PC. So if you're a console gamer primarily, you'll be able to play Diablo II Resurrected from the get-go. It's not coming out later. It's coming out at the same time. Based on how good the console port of Diablo III was,
mm-hmm.
and considering that the Vicarious Visions team, console ports and remasters are what they do, I feel like this is going to be a good game to play on consoles. I played, but when I was playing the beta test, I played it on a PC, but I played it on a PC with a controller, with an actual PlayStation controller, because that's what I've got plugged into my computer. And it worked really well. It was surprisingly fluid. It was quite enjoyable. So yeah, if you're a console player and you don't normally play games like this, give this one a shot. It's something I'm really excited to get to see people play for the first time. People have never played it before. I want to see how they react to it.
It's
a different experience than most modern games. Most modern action RPGs live in a world made by Diablo II.
Mm-hmm.
But Diablo II didn't live in that world because obviously it didn't exist. You know, Diablo II made it. So obviously when they were making Diablo II, they weren't reacting to Diablo II. It wasn't out yet. That sounds weird, but it's kind of like thinking about the Beatles. Again, I often use the Beatles to talk about Diablo II. The Beatles may not be your favorite band. It's not my favorite band. I don't love the Beatles. I like a lot of their music individually, but I'm not like a major Beatles fan. But I live in a world that I literally my entire life, the Beatles have existed. They shaped the world. After them, music went a certain way because of the influence that they had. That's Diablo II for action RPGs. Diablo II, every single action RPG that's come out since it has been influenced by
it. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Some of them are straight up like trying to make it again. Others are just, you know, because Diablo II did it this way, we're doing it different, so we're different. And that's something that I feel like when you go play Diablo II, it feels super familiar, even if you've never played it. But it can surprise you with stuff that just they don't do in modern games anymore. The inventory system, which they left in pretty much entirely the same as it was. You will be surprised by it. You will be like, really? I have to do that? You do.
Get ready to use a Haradra cube as storage there, folks.
Yeah. So, I mean, they did put in a stash this time because people were going to make one anyway. They were going to create a character just to send stuff to it. So they're like, fine, you can just have a stash. But yeah, it is interesting to experience this game coming back at this time because it is the thing that made this genre. Before Diablo, action RPG didn't mean much of anything. People used to call the Zelda games action RPGs.
Yep.
And then Diablo came along and like, oh no, this is what that is. Zelda's just an RPG. This is an action RPG. This thing is what we're talking about. So yeah, I am super excited to get to see people play it. I'm really looking forward to September 23rd. I will probably have the game that day. I'm looking at my pre-order options right now.
I mean, I already pre-purchased it, so I'll be playing that day. You, if you try to find me on that day, that's where I'll be. But yeah, it's good times, man.
This is exciting for me. I feel like after the Warcraft 3 problem, and that's an example, I think, of game hype really destroying what could have been a really good launch.
Agreed.
They had gotten people interested in it in a way that turned out not to be what they were doing. Yeah, it ended up not being good. So I'm really excited about this. I want this to be the remaster that sets the tone. I'm really excited. But I think that pretty much covers it for news, so we should move on to do some emails.
Indeed. Would you like to give your spiel, sir?
Okay. Should do that, shouldn't I? If you've got a question for the show, you can use the email to send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch so we know it's for this show. Because quite frankly, I'm really tired of putting on the loincloth to wrestle with Joe for questions, and I'm sure he also doesn't want to do it anymore. I mean, it's really hot, and so slapping ourselves together in a wrestling type thing, it's really warm. I don't want to do it. So, you know, keep that in mind. But if you, you know, want to use our Discord server, you can go to patron Q and podcast questions channel, where we look first because, you know, you're a patron and we want to look at your questions. It's a thing we do. Or you can go to the Q questions channel. That's for anybody who goes to Discord. You don't have to be a patron. We do go to that one last, but you know, you've got a decent chance if you put a question in there of it being answered. We even put one in this email, although technically we didn't put it in this email. I put it in the next email because I had forgotten to put it in this email, because that's the kind of professionalism you want from your host.
But it exists in this, in an email format for us to read.
Yes, we are going to try and get to it. Joe usually reads them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. First up, question for Blizzard Watch Podcast from Vertigree, the Forsaken Mage. Why are PvP talents PvP only? I can think of useful things to do, for instance, with Frost Mage's my Anjana-inspired Ice Wall and the Demon Hunter thing where they leap into the sky during PvE content. There was a decision a long time ago when they started paring down talent trees. If you didn't play during Vanilla or BC or before the great, what I call the talent culling, everything was just kind of thrown in to, like, a mishmash of everything exists in whatever your spec trees are. And so PvE, PvP was all mixed together. The problem with that is that the game evolved from what it originally was, right? So when the game originally came out, there weren't arenas. There were battlegrounds at some,
Battlegrounds were like around patch 1.3 to 1.4.
Yeah. They weren't like initially released. And the idea of PvP was something that you experienced in the world, so it made more sense to have all of your talents kind of in one place, because you could be going to, let's say, Black Rock Mountain, getting ready to go into Blackwing Lair, and then all of a sudden a Night Elf decides to Unshadow Meld and True Shot you from stealth with guaranteed 100% crit and one-shot you, because that's a thing that I used to do to people. And then you'd find yourself in a protracted engagement, or maybe it was in Torrenmill, or that was how the game was. Now it's completely different animal, right? It's PvP is its own separate, almost like game inside of the game itself. And so if you do arenas or rated battlegrounds or things like that, having a talent pool that specifically affects that and your abilities in that context makes more sense, because then they don't have to balance PvE content like raids and dungeons and mythic pluses and things like that with those PvP talents in mind. And it makes it a much easier task to do both of those things and make them good, or as good as they can make them, without having to worry about the other. We used to do some real janky stuff with PvP talents and PvE, let me tell you.
Well, I mean, one talent that is a PvE talent that you can use in PvP, even to this day, that priests have, is mind control. I lost count of the amount of times I watched our priests mind control horde characters into the lava in Molten Core. I mean, around Molten Core, on their way to try to go to the raid, and vice versa. We would have it happen to us. If you look at the very example you used, the abilities you mentioned, they can be cool and have a real impact on gameplay because they're limited to PvP. If every single Demon Hunter could just leap into the sky and most likely avoid a ton of horrible things that, you know, hit people, they would do so. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be a question. You'd want to have that, you'd do it. And that would mean encounters would have to either be designed to make that not reasonable, which could have all sorts of problems. If now the boss damage is doing weird stuff to make sure it hits people. Yeah, there's a lot of balance stuff that it just isn't. It's better to not have to have that. It's better to not, you know, that way you can make talents that feel cool and unique and do something cool in PvP without trivializing anything in PvE, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, you can use almost everything you can use in PvE in PvP. Some things don't work the same way. Some things have diminishing returns or don't affect as much. I think crowd control is a good example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Crowd control is not as powerful in PvP as it is in PvE. On purpose, because there was a long time there where crowd control was super powerful, and therefore it was very powerful in PvP. And then they would go back and forth on it, and then it wouldn't be as good in dungeons. By having it be something that is not as good in PvP, you don't have to worry as much about, you know, every class having a, I think for a long time there, I think everybody was like a gnome or a human or a Forsaken. That was a big part of, and then I think with Burning Crusade, Blood Elves became extremely popular because they could silence everything. And it was a AoE silence, the arcane thing that they could do. I don't remember what it was named, but they had it was basically a magic interrupt they could do. I think they can still do it. I haven't played a Blood Elf in a while, but Arcane Torrent, was that what it was called?
Arcane Torrent.
And that had PvE and PvP balance issues. So there's a reticence on their part to open that box again. That's one of the reasons I think the PvP talents, they're designed for PvP. They're designed to be used in PvP against other players. In a weird sort of way, it's kind of like in Dungeons and Dragons, where like playing a PC, playing a player character versus playing a monster. The monsters have a lot of abilities they can use over and over again.
Oh yeah.
Because the monster's only going to be here for one encounter. And then either you lose or you kill it. Players have various abilities that are limited in time because the players will be going from encounter to encounter and you want them to feel like they've used up resources. The monster that could only do certain things so many times wouldn't feel as epic in a confrontation. Going into PvE content, you're fighting things again. They either win or they kill you, or you kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But PvP, if you get killed or if they get killed, somebody wins the encounter. There's variations to it. There's battlegrounds and they work a certain way. There's arenas and they work a certain way, and that's why PvP talents can have a different feel and have different ideas behind them than PvE stuff. I think it's just that simple. I get what you're saying, though. There's some stuff warriors get for PvP I'd absolutely love. But I can understand why it would sort of be abused. So,
yeah, and honestly, I'm just going to say it. Like, I like the fact that they divided that out. I think it makes for more interesting and diverse gameplay in those respective components of the game. So I know I'm probably going to get yelled at later for that, but I'm happy that those talents are separated. All right, our next one comes from our good friend Tetsemi. Question for Blizzard Watch. In regards to the discussion you had on the last show around borrowed power leveling at the end of game, for me, a lot of MMOs feel best during the leveling process, 1 to 50 and Star Wars The Old Republic, with the class stories are amazing, doing 1 to 10 the new revamped new player zone and WoW, etc. Borrowed power, as you said, and to a lesser extent, reputation grinds seem to try to capture that need-want to level, something once you've run out of character levels. Paragon levels in Diablo 3 work to a point to foster this feeling, because you're earning points to put into talents. Paragon levels in Shadowlands as well. But they all feel grindy and like an artificial progress, not real progress, like actual content leveling does to me. What type of system would you like to see at level cap that could capture that feeling you have making progress, getting to level cap, or just starting a new character for the first time and going through the content again? That's a real good question. I don't know if I have an answer, honestly.
Yeah, I can't sit here and say, well, they should do X, because if I could do that, quite frankly, I would be working there. I'm not a video game designer. I'd love to be, but I'm not. And this is the question that they've been trying to answer for multiple expansions now. Because I think I pointed out, WoW has always had a borrowed power system. It's just that it used to just be gear. Like, if you played in vanilla... And I remember this because I remember doing it. As you went through the raids and you got better gear, you'd then go to the next raid and get better gear again, and then you'd go to the next raid and eventually you'd be at Nax and you'd have the best gear in the game. And that was the borrowed power system. It was a guy in Nax gear.
Oh yeah,
could utterly destroy things.
Oh yeah. One man army.
I
mean,
I remember going into dungeons to help people get attunements and stuff for their alts, and I was tanking on a character who had been tanking up to Saffron. I was unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
I was so unstoppable that I had to take my pants off just to generate rage. I'm not kidding here. I don't mean in real life. I mean, my character went around with no pants on.
You had to get hit, folks. You had to get hit and take damage.
Yeah, I had to actually get hit and take damage. Otherwise, I couldn't generate any rage. I couldn't generate any threat because I wasn't taking any damage. So, yeah, I actually had to go around with my pants off. I did not have Thunder Fury yet. I got Thunder Fury later. But I was tanking with a Quel'Thuzar. And Quel'Thuzar had a really great enchantment for tanking. But it also meant I took even less damage. So, yeah, it got to the point where, like, someone once said, you know, why don't you take your shield off because nothing's going to kill you? And they weren't kidding. Like, I didn't get healed for an entire dungeon run once. No, I got a couple of HOTS. That's it. No direct heals were cast on me aside from, like, two or three HOTS. Every heal I got for that thing was basically just, oh, well, his health's starting to drop a little bit. Here's a heal over time.
Yeah.
And that's how that system worked. And it was fine for a while. And we talked about how it got broken, I think, in Wrath of the Lich King.
Wrath definitely tilted that, yeah.
And so then we start seeing like additions and changes and so forth. Badge gear, you know, vendor gear, stuff trying to make up for the problems of you know, random loot and how that system worked. And then we started getting systems like the artifact and what we've got now in game, where other systems exist to also make you more powerful and to give you progression feelings. But as Setsemi pointed out, they do feel extremely grindy.
Yeah. And the thing is like, whoever can figure out how to solve this particular riddle will have created the perfect MMO. And the reason I say that is because I don't think any MMO does it well. They all have different ways that they approach sort of this max level, trying to make you feel rewarded for gameplay, but it's really, really difficult to find something that works for a vast majority of players. It's almost the impossible question. How do you make everybody happy and feel like their time in game still means something? And like,
I think one thing I just want to get into, I think WoW actually tries to do this by having multiple different ways to do it.
I would agree. Yeah, WoW does it that way. Final Fantasy XIV has its own way of approaching it with the multiple job system, as well as like the housing system and things like that. WildStar used to have the housing system and stuff like that to give you things that you could still progress and earn that made you feel like you were doing something with the content. But it's a tricky thing because if you make leveling just be so long that it is the only thing you do, and that's what the game revolves around, and then you get to max level and there's nothing to do, you just go back to the beginning and start over again with a different character, then that gets sort of boring for certain
some people. Stop playing if that's what you do.
Yeah.
It's just some people, leveling is not fun. I mean, for you it is, and that's cool. I like leveling. So absolutely. But it's not like Dungeons & Dragons where in D&D you level until you get to the, like, they're, if you get to level 20, you're done. And most campaigns don't ever get there. But video games are not tabletop role-playing games. There's a different system here. A lot more people get to end game in MMOs. Mm-hmm. So it does have a different design focus. I'm going to try and like just come up with one just so it feels like I'm trying to answer the question instead of talking about why it's very hard to answer. One thing that could be done is to go back to the Path of the Titans idea, where it's almost like a subclass. You get to maximum level and you unlock, like, you know, I want to, you know, I'm playing a warrior because it's me. Of course I'm playing a warrior. Come on. I get to max level in the expansion and now the Path of the Titans opens and I can decide what kind of buffs and bonuses do I get? How does my character change? It's sort of like the mythic adventure system from Pathfinder, where you can become like a champion or a defender, or, you know, the ones that they're going to have in Pathfinder Kingmaker, where you start channeling the power of angels mm-hmm. or demons or other beings. Imagine if your warrior could like sign up and be like, you know, one of, you know, could join the Titans and gain power from them, or they could even, you know, start hunting down and like, you know, killing demons and using the tricks against them, or they could be tainted by undeath. And these are all choices you could make that would give you, you know, it's kind of like the Covenant thing, but it's specifically it's choices. Right now, you choose a covenant, and that's pretty much the end of your choices. Imagine if choosing a covenant was just the first step on deciding how your character was going to play, and there were new talents and abilities you could get, and you'd level them kind of more like a Paragon system, something that would be different and distinctive. That might work. It would still kind of feel grindy, though. I don't see a way around that. Possibly make the stuff you get kind of like... Imagine if the system we have for the legendaries, where you have to go and get the legendaries from dungeons and so forth, imagine if that was just applied to you. That might be kind of interesting. I don't know. But what do you think, Joe? You got any ideas for how to do this?
I don't know. This is something I think about often, and I've talked about with folks, not on the podcast, but like, I've never been able to come up with something that doesn't feel grindy as all get out. And it's because when you hit that max level, it's here's where I struggle with it. It's the power gain. As you level, you gain powers. And I think maybe Path of the Titans wouldn't be a terrible idea, where maybe you can have things that augment or adjust what your abilities or talents do. And maybe instead of leveling, maybe it's something that you earn ways or points or things to move points around. Like maybe there's a finite number of things that you can have active at a time, maybe similar to what the conduit system is. I actually kind of really like the conduit system, actually. And maybe instead of, you know, you leveling or doing things to earn points, maybe it's you leveling up in or earning, doing things to earn ways to move that around so that you can do different things or unlock different things, whether it's cosmetics or visual appearances or whatever. And it becomes almost like a finite resource that you do things to sort of replenish over time.
You think also, we've talked before about cosmetic systems, and for some players that would not be particularly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to suggest it, but I do think, like, imagine if you could, we have the racial, I mean, uniforms that are like the transmogs that are coming out. You know, I'm a dwarf, so I get the dwarf transmog. I'm a gnome, so I get the gnome transmog sort of thing. Imagine if you had that for a class, and like every class had like multiple different ones that you could take up to use. Like, again, we're going to use warriors as an example because I play them a lot. Imagine if, like, warriors, if you're a dwarf playing a warrior, you could get the Mountain King. You know, you, if you were playing a Tauren, you could get, like, the, you know, the Hoof Lord or something. Or Tauren Chieftain, what have you. And you could progress in that, and you could pick specific things that were not power upgrades necessarily, but flavor changes to abilities. Like, for the Mountain King, the avatar form would, like, literally turn you into a giant rock thing. It would be very distinctive looking. For the Tauren Chieftain, the avatar is just, you know, summoning the power of your ancestors. So you get like a ghostly sheen of an ancestor around you as you're fighting. Kind of like the you know, the Diablo Ancients thing where you could, mm-hmm. you could have power of the Ancients or what have you. Various, and every class could have some, and you could progress in, like, there'd be some that would be, like I said, racial ones, like the Dwarf one or the Tauren one. There would be some that were just like, you know, the Juggernaut, where you're still tanking. You're still if you took as a prot warrior, you're still tanking. You're still doing everything the same way, but the stuff is more about how, you know, instead of it being about blocking with your shield or whatever, it's about how nothing can stop you. You take the damage and you don't die, and it's that's how it works. And if you're an arms warrior, it's just about how big and powerful you are. There's ways you could do it that aren't power progression, but they are progression. People went nuts for the Warlock Green Fire. Remember that?
Oh yeah, that was amazing.
It. Not everybody uses it, but lots of people wanted it. And even if they didn't use it, they still went and did the quest because it was a cool quest. And you got new, so now I can do that if I want to. So I think like that kind of thing could really work, where it's progression, but it isn't going to give you any new power. It's just going mm-hmm. to let you change the way you play. The way you look when you play.
Yeah.
Or even add maybe a few things that are differently empowering. Like, instead of heroic leap, you get like magnum charge or something, where instead you like pinball your character off of two things. You could actually charge, and when you hit the guy you charge, you immediately charge to something else nearby. And that's not really going to make you a lot stronger, but it's different and it's a unique way to play it. Maybe stuff like that. That's all I can come up with at this point, though.
But we talk about that a lot, but I think it is a good idea. I think the idea of having a certain level of cosmetics or something that like doesn't mechanically change like damage or give an advantage, but instead just changes how things look or give you a way to further customize your character. I think those are cool ideas, and maybe you can work that into something where it's something you work towards and you gain as you level up, sort of yeah. like that meter, right? Like as you get further through it, it becomes more and more so, right?
Especially so. Runes. Like we used to have runes that did this kind of thing, and then we lost runes, and I feel like sometimes we lost them too soon. Like there was some interesting stuff in there. And then it basically, there's a few that are still around, but it used to be a whole thing. And I feel like maybe it got flushed away too fast.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm definitely down with that.
Yeah.
So right. I think we can move on to the next one there, which is from our friend Rickles. Hey, Watchers, do we know what's up with the Worgen nowadays? Did they ever make it back to Gilneas? Also, what have been your favorite Covenant campaign and why? I don't think they've gotten back. I think that was like on the docket to do, but I don't think they ever actually took Gilneas back, right?
No, I don't think that in lore, I don't believe they've actually taken Gilneas back. I know that when you did the in Cataclysm, the Rogue Dagger quests, you go to Gilneas and it's currently like a war-torn nightmare land with like black dragons as warlords and stuff, although they're in disguise, but you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it I think that's the most recent example of the story, and I don't think we've heard anything since. Obviously, the Worgen were still in Darnassus when it got burned, because they're literally their king and queen were there trying to defend it.
I mean, she yeah. died, didn't she?
No, Mia lived.
Mia lived. That's right. Died. That's right. She almost died.
Yeah, she did live. So clearly, they were still. Most of them were still living in Darnassus. So yeah, I don't believe they have. I want them to. Very badly, but I don't believe they have. As for my favorite Covenant campaign, I like the Kyrian one. I think the Venthyr one has like some really cool story stuff, and we know we're going to see more about it. But I got to go with Ardenweald, because I really like Ardenweald. I feel like it works really well for the character I play the most. I really like the kind of, I don't want to call it amoral, but the Winter Queen's particular brand of pragmatism, where she's not like malevolent and she doesn't wish harm upon people.
She's neutral.
I don't even know I'd say she's neutral. I just feel like she goes along with this specific kind of approach to things where like some things you accept, some things are part of what happens, things die, things are reborn. That's part of the cycle. But when she, you know, gets her dudgeon up, she's really impressive. I feel like I want to see more of that. I know we're going to get more of the Kyrian story in 9.1, and I'm hoping we get more of the other ones too. But yeah, I think they're all pretty good. I didn't do the Maldraxxus one, and I feel like, but we are going to see more of that. No, that's not true. I did some of the Maldraxxus one. We're going to definitely see more of that in 9.1 because we find out things about stuff that's mentioned there that I'm not going to talk about now because it would be spoilers. And we do a whole lore podcast every week, so I'll save it for that. But yeah, that's my take. I end up having to go with Ardenweald. Joe?
I think Ardenweald is still my favorite simply because, again, I tend to like the way that story unfolds. I think it is my favorite in terms of cohesiveness. And what you do and what you're dealing with and everything, it just speaks to me in a way as a player that it just tends to stand out as my favorite. I think all of them are pretty dang cool. I think there's some really cool aspects to all of them. So it's, you can't go wrong picking any of them. I think they all have their merits. I think they all have a good story to tell. And I do appreciate that there's more story coming in 9.1. And we talked about this before, especially on Lore Watch, where the Covenant campaigns ended at a point where it feels like it's just the first chapter. And that there's more story to be told in every single one of them. And I think that's very, very true. And I think at the end of this expansion, it'll be a very interesting thought experiment to go back and to see what we feel is the best campaign in our, like, or our favorite campaign after everything is done.
Because so far right now, I will say that I feel a lot more like these are closer than mm-hmm. I did in Legion.
Oh yeah.
Where
yeah,
some, yeah, yeah. some class campaigns were like really lacking. Like I felt like the warrior one was kind of stale. The Death Knight one was super cool. The Paladin and Priest ones were cool. The Shaman one was really cool. And the Warrior one was just, I get to be Odin's Pokemon. So yeah, I definitely feel like they've gotten, by only doing four instead of doing like, you know, the 12 or 11 or they did that time, we've gotten a lot closer to getting them all around the same way in terms of quality. I definitely think they're all pretty good. The Maldraxxus one is surprisingly good for me because I didn't like Maldraxxus or thought I wanted to do it at all. And then I was like, oh no, this is really interesting.
Yep. I think I agree with your sentiment. Everything is much closer than it ever was before. So I don't know. Anything else you want to add to that before we move on?
No, I think that we're pretty good.
All right, this is a bit of a longer one, so bear with me, folks. Greetings to those who watch All That Is Chilly. I appreciate when you guys put, you know, different epitaphs in there. Long time, first time. As we are currently dealing with the Shadowlands, this is the perfect time to do something with the Forsaken. I'm not sure if anyone else has thought about this, but I believe I might have a couple ways to solve the Forsaken's plight. Firstly, seeing as the technology already exists that allows gnomes to become mechagnomes, couldn't the same technology be used on the Forsaken bodies? Being able to always have body parts to swap when damaged seems like a great ability to have and would dramatically increase their ability to not decline in number from combat. Plus, while I know that Warhammer 40k Necrons don't have the same lore as Forsaken, I've always loved their aesthetic. Undead cyborgs sound awesome, and it's something that the Horde really needs. More shiny, less explodey, and spiky tech. Alternatively, the idea of a soul being what being able to be transferred to a new body exists in lore, with the best example being the Valajar. While we still don't know exactly what the deal between Sylvanas and Helia was, maybe part of it was to learn how to Stormforge, or do something similar to the Forsaken. As the Forsaken are undead humans, as we all know humans are descendants of the Vrykul, the process should be easy enough to do. Or Odin or whoever is currently residing in the Halls of Stone / Lightning now might not appreciate us barging in, but the facilities are relatively ready to be used again to produce bodies. Just a couple ideas that would make great additions as allied races, if not completely replacing Forsaken. Thanks for indulging this thought. Maleficus, the balanced druid from Hyjal. Yeah, that's... We talk about this a lot, and we've talked about this a bunch on the Lore Watch podcast. It's what do you do with the Forsaken at this point? And I think Matt and I both agreed that the Forsaken need some time in the light right now. If for nothing else, because of everything that just happened and then got dropped, because their story sort of peaked with the whole Sylvanas betrayal of everything, and then nothing else has been said or done about it. And they definitely deserve some attention. Like, what are they going to do? Like, what, how are they dealing with this? How are they coping with this? And we also talked about the whole soul thing. Uther has sort of thrown a weird monkey wrench into that whole plan, right? It's this idea that your soul could potentially be split, maybe? And what does that mean for the Forsaken? Do the Forsaken have all of their souls? Are they the same entity that they were in life that they are now in undeath? Is it just the body decaying? And to go back to something you mentioned the 40k lore about the Necrons. In Age of Sigmar, they talk about the Stormcast Eternals, where they are essentially the Valajar. They're the folks that souls are being reforged, but there's this concept that when they die, they're reforged again, and they continue to lose pieces of themselves in a slow descent into insanity as they are reforged endlessly over eons. Is that what happens to them? Mechanomes aren't exactly a perfect entity. We don't know what long-term being in a robot body is going to do for them. Maybe it makes them even crazier.
Mechanomes are an imperfect attempt at remechanization.
Yeah.
Remechanization is not the mechagome process. The mechagome process is lopping stuff off and replacing it with metal parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. That's not your original arm. Whereas he Mecha, you know, I can't remember his first name. I remember his second name was Zod. It was Overseer, wasn't it?
The king?
No. In Borean Tundra.
Oh,
there's a quest.
Yeah.
Where you find one of the original gnomes, the Mecha gnomes, one of the original ones. He gets dug up and he starts immediately returning the gnomes to Mecha gnomes. Like, he can undo the curse of flesh, and he's doing it. And the gnomes are like, could you stop him? We like being flesh. And Mecha, you go, Zod. And he's like, Mecha Zod, thank you. I knew it was Zod, but I couldn't remember. And he's like, when you go to him, he's like, no, why are you fighting me? I just want to return you to perfection. And he's like, I'm so sad that you're doing this, but I must fight you because I got to get rid of this horrible thing that's happened to you. That's what the Mecha gnomes want to do, but they can't do it. The Mecha gnome process is not that. It's not perfect. It does not reverse the curse of flesh and make them mechanical beings. They're still gnomes with gnome brains and gnome flesh. They're just lopping it off. Would that work for Forsaken? I haven't got a clue, because I don't know how it works. I don't know if you require a life force to power that thing. I have no concept. I do know that it's not very likely now that the gnomes and Mecha gnomes are united, mm-hmm. and that, you know, one guy is king of both, that he is going to give the technology to the Forsaken, which would mean either A, we have to have a heist film where like some horde, a bunch of hordes doing an Ocean's 11 to steal the secrets of Mecha gnoming and give that to the Forsaken, or some enterprising goblin is going to have to try and come up with the goblin version of it. And boy, that's a brave Forsaken is willing to strap on those parts, man.
Explodey and spiky says hello.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I also think to a certain degree that you don't necessarily want the Forsaken to come up with a solution to this. Part of their deal is that they are crumbling and, you know, doomed. That's sort of the aesthetic.
Yeah, but I mean,
just hear me out. It doesn't mean there shouldn't be more done with them, and we shouldn't get to see some progress for them as characters. It just means that Forsaken are Forsaken. You don't necessarily want them to, like, oh, hey, now we have a perfect solution and everything's great. No, but you could have horrible experiments that go wrong. That's very Forsaken. The Forsaken are all about horrible experiments going wrong. That goes all the way back to vanilla, when Mytorin found herself, you know, getting stuff from color pools in Ashara and bringing it back to Lordaeron, and only for the Forsaken alchemist to kill the Tauren I was trying to cure. Like, oh, well, that still taught me a lot. So I could see, imagine they managed to make a raid. They managed to, like, make a deal with Helya, then they make a raid into the halls, you know, the Halls of Valor, steal something. They steal, like, a codex that supposedly contains the secrets to making, you know, their own Vrykul.
Mm-hmm.
But when they try it, it doesn't really work like they hoped, and you get something horrible. But what's horrible to a Forsaken? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, yeah, sure, that's a nightmare creature with bone wings, and, you know, it screams, and it never stops screaming. But, you know, it does actually allow us to, like, repair our bodies. We just have to keep it, you know, contained. That's worth giving a shot. You know, okay, sure, sometimes it combines two Forsaken into one body. Not ideal. Apparently it drives you insane and turns you into a monster wants to kill. Now you've got a dungeon concept here. You know, the Halls of Rebirth.
Ooh,
they want to fix being Forsaken. They've got all these experiments, things they've been trying. None of them have worked out yet. I mean, they did steal all that Mechanome technology and gave it to that one goblin to try and make it work. Okay, so far all we've got is a bunch of Deathlocks that want to kill us, but, you know, it's at least it's a first step. Meanwhile, we've also tried to return souls into bodies. Apparently, Forsaken souls aren't entirely compatible, but, you know, we've been trying. Screaming Monster, but, you know, hey, again, it's a step, and that could be like a whole thing. And it doesn't change the Forsaken immediately, but now it gives you an idea that there is some progress being made. There is an attempt. The Forsaken are trying to become something else. They're trying to now they don't have Sylvanas anymore, or if they do, I don't know what's going to happen with Sylvanas, but they don't have the world isn't the way it used to be, and they're trying to grow on. Maybe there's like, imagine there's one who's trying to recreate the Kali Amenethil process.
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring that up. Like, we still have not resolved that whole thing. Like, that's a thing that exists. Kali Amenethil is in Shadowlands. She's in the Shadowlands. Like, she's there. Like, how are the Forsaken feel about that? She's been around for a little bit now. How's that going? Are they trying to recreate that? Is she trying to help recreate that? Like, there's a lot you could do to make it a very complicated and messy thing that becomes a longer story. And I like I like where your head's at with that. Yeah. Right.
You don't necessarily want to undo everything super. You don't want it to be neat. No. You don't want it to be, oh, we've got a solution now. But the idea that they're trying to get a solution, I mean, and have different people who have different ideas. Like, one guy just wants to return them to life. So we're gonna straight up become living beings again. So far it hasn't worked, and everything that he's tried has been a horrible monstrosity, but he's working on it.
Hey, I saw that thing happen in Ardenweald once. Maybe I can apply it here.
And meanwhile, there's another one who's like, no, what we need is cyborgs. And of course, that hasn't worked. But again, Forsaken experiments, from the beginning of the, you know, they've always been nightmares. You know, putting the people in charge of coming up with multiple versions of the plague, you know, on this project, you're going to get some warped stuff. But mm-hmm. That's cool. Get some reanimator stuff happening. You go with it. Play along with the idea. I think there's a lot we could do here. I would like to see more happen for the Forsaken. I absolutely would. I just want to know where they live. Or, well, they, of course, they don't do any living. I want to know where they keep their stuff. You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, they can't. They're not going to be able to stay in Orkmar for very long. Right?
I mean, I guess they could, but, like, do you want to? I mean, as it is, someone was like, you know, they have that whole place Garrosh was going to use as a base. They could go live down there. I'm like, so basically they get to live in Orgrimmar's sewers now.
Well, technically, like, it's a basement, not a sewer, but you know.
Is there any point where the Forsaken could just go live someplace? Or, again, not live. They're not going to be doing any of that. But they could just go be. They don't have to go hide in the basement or the sewer or what have you. They could just be on the surface and be there. I don't know. I feel like Andor Hall would be a good place for the Forsaken to colonize and build a new city that they actually can be in on the surface and not have to go hide in the sewer. I really feel like there's a lot you can do to, like, progress them and in a way that doesn't take away what they are.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's a certain level of that too that I think that for lack of a better term that I think we're missing as well is, like, Shadowlands opens up a whole other opportunity for that, specifically with Maldraxxus, right? Maldraxxus, the skeleton pit of the Shadowlands, is a wonderful place for horrible experimentation. And it highlights how you can use anima to recreate things that are very close and adjacent to Forsaken. And so, like, you could have a whole experimentation with that, a whole exploration of anima. Maybe they're making deals with brokers. Like, I think that it is one of the most ripe, like, seeds for, like, something to bloom from that we could possibly have in this game, that I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting for something to happen with it. Like, I want Forsaken to have a massive part in what's coming up. And I think that would be, I would be fine with. And Skylance, I see you in chat there. I agree. And I think at the same time, we should swing back to the Worgen. And at the same time that the Forsaken are figuring their stuff out, Worgen should be figuring their stuff out for the Alliance. So that you have an equitable thing, because that's another thing that just has not been touched. Right? Gen has been just dealing with, you know, helping run the Alliance and now basically running the Alliance, because Anduin is, you know, basically being ridden around like a drone, or piloted like a drone. But they still have a homeland to get to. Where are they going to go now? Are they just going to live in Stormwind? Are they going to run around in the, you know, the weird Worgen infested hills that are just south of there in Darkshire? What's going to happen with them? What's going on with them? you can do an equivalent thing as well with them sort of figuring out their space. And I think everybody could be happy, or at least happy-ish, with some storytelling that expands upon that. But yeah, I've been waiting for those sort of like the seeds to blossom. I really, really have.
But that's probably it for the show, right? Because
we're right up on time. So I'm going to go ahead and do my thing, and then you can do your thing. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast fighting community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you got questions, by the way, that last one really went, I'm actually really happy with how that went. Kudos. That was cool.
Very good question.
If you've got a question for the show, you can do one of two things. You can send it to our email address, podcast@blizzardwatch.com, subject line podcast at Blizzard Watch, so I don't get hit in the back of the head with a rock by Joe, you know, at some point.
It wasn't a rock.
No, not this time, but you know, we know it's coming. Every time I hear that Star Trek music start up, I'm afraid. Or you can go to our Discord, and we've got the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel, or the Q Questions channel. Or sometimes, actually, we do try to take stuff from the people in the live audience. We didn't do any of that this week, unfortunately, but we have in previous weeks, and we are always looking to do that. That's something we want to get more audience interaction with. So those are how you can do that. This has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast. Thank you guys for being here with us, and we'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.